Funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. To what extent is personal identity bound up in gender identity? And what would it feel like if the body you were born in did not match your sense of who you were? As a growing number of Americans agree that people deserve equal rights regardless of who they love, many transgender people are hopeful they might be accepted by their communities regardless of whether they identify as inherently male, female, or something else. Joining us to talk about their own experiences are three members of the transgender community in North Texas. Renee Baker is a counselor and case manager at North Texas Youth Connection. Carter Brown is founder and executive director of Black Trans Men, Inc. And Liz Larson is an electronics engineer who's been sharing her experiences as a trans woman, wife, and mother on her Facebook page. Welcome all of you to Think.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I think this topic may feel new to listeners who don't have any transgender friends or family members. So if you don't mind, I want to start with a few definitions. First of all, gender identity is a separate thing from sexual orientation. Will you explain that for us, Renee?
Sure. Gender identity is really something that we learn from a very young age. Our first identities that we really learn in life are that we're human beings. And then the second identity that we take on is really gender, and our sense of identifying to our mothers or our fathers. And those become organizing principles upon which we live the rest of our lives. Sexual orientation are really the people that we find ourselves attracted to, that we want to be in intimate relationships with. So it's different than gender. It's a different organizing principle.
So you can be transgender and be gay or lesbian or heterosexual or neither or both. Is that essentially correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Liz, I know that you are deeply invested in helping people understand the diversity in the transgender community. Did that come as a surprise even to you as you first started exploring the subject and meeting other people who felt that their biological sex at birth and their gender identity were different?
I've met lots of people that I'm sorry, let me think about the question.
Okay, well, I'll come back to you in a second.
Okay.
That's fine. Carter, you're African-American, and even in 2013, being a black man in America carries with it a certain stigma in certain parts of the population. You've said the black man is the most feared man in America. So did that take on an added weight for you as you thought about making your own transition?
Absolutely. And honestly was not prepared for the actual journey of being a black man in America. Prior to my transgender identity, I identified as a lesbian, and navigating through society as a lesbian, you know, although I had the image of a masculine person, even still, there's a lot of more privilege and acceptance for women in a lot of situations, even in my butch or masculine identity as a female. Whereas as a black man, I experienced much more discrimination, even in my own African-American community. All of a sudden, I took on a new role where I was expected to be aggressive or hyper-masculine. I was expected to be the offender, as opposed to all of us, you know, previously being the person that may need help or, you know, the person in distress. In any situation, I was automatically the offender, and things of that nature. So, indeed, it definitely took a different journey for me that I was not prepared for and was an eye-opening experience.
Were there people who sort of warned you ahead of time? Like, you have no idea. You think you know, but you don't know.
Exactly. I thought I knew simply because I presented as masculine as a female, but actually undoubtedly blending as male in every situation, having changed my name and my gender marker and, you know, in all legalities as well as, you know, a social life, I was completely male. And I didn't have anyone to warn me. I mean, I've had biological male friends talk about their experiences, and at the time I honestly couldn't relate, but all of a sudden I was living those very experiences, and it was very shocking. And unfortunately, I did not have anyone to talk to. I didn't have any other transgender people, much less African-American transgender people that I could associate with or relate to, which ultimately prompted me to found the nonprofit organization Black Trans Men, Inc.
I was, in doing research for the show, trying to sort of get a firm grasp on the number of transgender people living in America today, and I couldn't come up with a figure that seemed reliable because they were all so different. Is there a reason for that? Has no one researched this, or why do we not know?
My feeling is that the vast majority of transgender individuals, and I'll define transgender as someone who differs in the usual gender norms, is because most people are still in a closet. They don't come out and say, hey, here I am and take my number, so that doesn't really happen so much. So the numbers that we do have, for example, for those that do a physical transition, and have gender reassignment surgery, those kind of things we have some numbers on because the surgeons are, offering so many surgeries per year. So, but it's a lot harder to determine how many people are taking hormone therapy, how many people are living in a different gender role without doing anything physical. So there's not really any data available that people can get to very easily.
Do you each remember a moment when you first realized that your gender and your body didn't match and how you sort of handled that dawning realization?
I think I've felt differently for a long time, but it was more of a slow, gradual process to uncover what I needed to do as far as transition goes. A decade ago, I identified as genderqueer, which means that I didn't see myself as male or female, just kind of sorting myself out. That's during the time when I got married and things became, my issues kind of got on the back burner for a long time before deciding to transition. So it took a lot of self-searching and reminders from my wife who was very encouraging during that whole time.
Well, for myself, there were times certainly when I was very young, like 5 years old, that, I was having feelings of gender incongruence. And then probably by junior high school is when I started really thinking about gender reassignment. Of course, back in those days, we used the word sex change. Hearing things about sex changes on television and things like that. So actually, my first encounter was like on a 60 Minutes that episode back in the day. So those are times when you start thinking about it. Of course, in the 70s and 80s, you really don't have any connection to the rest of the world and the rest of the transgender community. So you really intend on living a normal, in quote marks, life and not really ever intending to transition. So today's a lot different.
Yeah, I have to imagine that I think you and I are about the same age, that you didn't see a lot of positive role models out there as you started realizing that this was who you were.
That's absolutely true. I really didn't have, not only did I not have any transgender role models, but there weren't really any feminists in my life that were, breaking down gender barriers and things like that. I grew up in a fairly conservative culture. And so it really wasn't even until I was in my early 40s when I started to get connected to the gay community in Dallas itself, which at that point things start to become a lot more liberating and you can start to be yourself without fear of rejection.
Carter, what about you? What was your first sense of who you really were?
I would say at an early age, childhood, maybe 5 or 6. And fortunately, my mother was very open-minded, and she did allow us to express ourselves pretty much freely. So I was allowed to wear boy clothing and whatever I chose. And she was very encouraging at that time. They just dismissed it as I was a tomboy, and that was okay. I didn't really see it as a problem of my gender identity until probably about high school and puberty, when your body starts to develop. And I started to develop, of course, female body parts, and that was very discouraging. I also became odd socially. I didn't really know where I fit because I'd always identified more with other young boys as far as friends and that sort of thing. I didn't really come into a transgender identity or explore what a transgender identity was, or that there may even be more to the gender construct, until I would say about high school, when you start dating and sexually experimenting or sexual curiosity. And at that point, I knew that my body was not, was definitely not in congruence with my mind and where I felt that I fit into society.
Did you realize at that time that there could be a way for you to live as a man?
I did not. I had no idea. I didn't learn that until maybe mid-90s or late-90s, watching a talk show, and they had a transgender person on there, actually a transgender man. I'd actually seen shows with transgender women or transsexual women, I believe it was called, majority at that time. But once I saw a transgender man on some talk show, then that's when I saw, you know, a real vision of what my future could be.
You know, Carter brought up something really interesting, which is that our society for some reason has this weird thing where we think it's adorable if girls want to act like boys. And for some reason, society has a much harder time if a boy does things that are traditionally associated with girls. Did you all, Liz and Renee, did you experience sort of that sense that if your sisters had wanted to act like boys, it would have been a different story?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up homeschooled, so that was kind of a double-edged sword for me because I wasn't placed into a lot of gender-segregated environments, such as if I had been in the public school system. So I wasn't made very consciously aware of my gender for a long time. My mom came from the, you know, Marlo Thomas generation with
free to be you and me.
Right. Exactly. So I was encouraged to play with dolls, and I did a lot of things thinking back as a boy that I didn't think were not appropriate at the time, that I certainly would have been made fun of for if I had been attending public school.
Mm-hmm. And I think too that, you know, boys and girls would not, you know, our genders are really pushed farther apart than they would be if we were allowed to be free. And, you know, we have experiments. I think you had Christina Hoff Sommers on your show recently. And I think it's in one of her books. She talks about an experiment with boys and girls where when they're left alone to play, the boys and girls will all play with both boys and girls' toys. But when an adult walks into the room, they start to segregate, and the girls go over and play with the dolls, and the boys go play with the trucks and stuff.
So the presence of an authority figure essentially says, I better, you know, do what is expected of me.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. These days, I mean, it must. Do you each remember the first time that you walked into a room, met a stranger, and nobody blinked, and they just accepted you for the identity that you feel is your identity? Was it more of a gradual process? Do you understand what the question?
Passing, as how you want to be portrayed. Mm-hmm. It's happening gradually. I mean, I'm in the middle of it right now. I'm in a sort of androgynous zone where most people just won't gender me if they're unsure. But
yeah, I think it was gradual for me because I can't remember a striking moment off the top of my head. And still today, when I go through, you know, drive-through at a restaurant or something like that, sometimes people say, "Sir," you know, you're one of the differences between trans males and trans women is that our voices. I know we're running on the music's coming on, but for trans women, our voices don't change with hormones.
Yeah, they don't rise.
Right.
So. My guests this hour are Renee Baker, Carter Brown, and Liz Larson, all members of the transgender community in North Texas. We'll resume the conversation in a moment. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with three members of the North Texas transgender community. Liz Larson is an electronics engineer. Carter Brown is founder and executive director of Black Trans Men, Inc. And Renee Baker is a counselor and case manager at North Texas Youth Connection. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Liz, I know that you, as you mentioned, you met your wife while you were living in your male body. I'm curious for the other two of you, and I realize I'm asking you to generalize here, how things like dating work, how you sort of make the decision when you're interested in somebody to how much of your story to share and at what point, and are there, within the trans community, are there sort of protocols and do people discuss the ideal way to do this?
Yes, we do discuss it in the transgender community, or I've discussed it with other trans men specifically. And the response varies. People have their own preferences, probably in two parts. Some people will disclose initially when they think that there's a possibility of the interest growing between themselves and another person, just so that the other person knows up front, and their attitude about disclosing early is so that they can know if it's even worth pursuing, or it's that person's right to know exactly who they're dealing with. Whereas other people are may hold back on disclosing until they're more comfortable with the trust being built in that relationship. And that's based upon, if you know, knowing how that person's going to react. Are they going to be violent? Are they going to spread their information, you know, in a negative way yeah. to other people? So a lot of people may hold on to that information until they can build a better relationship and then disclose that information.
My feelings is that it helps to just kind of organically, you know, answer it as you need to in a relationship with someone. You know, I have a little button at home that says I'm transgender and I vote, but I don't wear it every day. So
yeah,
so it's hard to just, you know, come out to somebody because it's kind of awkward. You know, don't walk around and tell people that you're not transgender. So in the same way, you wouldn't just instantly tell someone that you are transgender. So that's a gradual process, for, I think, for most of us. And you answer it as it comes in up in a conversation. For example, someone might ask me about my children, you know, or something like that. And if it comes up and they ask me, well, you know, how was your pregnancy? Okay, well, that might be a time to say, well, you know, I'm really the dad, I'm not the mom. And then they might ask, you know, well, why is that? And then you can explain that you're transgender. So, or it comes up in, you know, medical situations, why is it you're taking hormones and that kind of thing. So there's appropriate ways to come up and to do it organically as the need arises.
Do you have to develop a sort of sixth sense in sort of everyday life, not people that you plan to become really close to? Do you develop a sense for who you might mention this to and who it's not worth the trouble or it's just going to cause you more heartache?
Absolutely. When you're transgender and throughout the entire transition, you become more conscious not only of your own mannerisms and characteristics, but also other people's. And you grade their character on, you know, how you observe them talk about other people, how they treat other people. Are they gay bashing people? Are they saying negative things about other transgender people? So you definitely decide who to be aware of, who it's okay to trust, and at what limits will you disclose your personal information to anyone.
And sometimes I think if you notice that a person is very racist or they're, you know, anti-Jewish or, you know, all those kinds of things are key indicators that it's probably not worth your time because it would take mm-hmm. way too much energy to try to persuade someone to re-question those beliefs. So,
Liz, you mentioned that your wife has been very supportive all along, which is pretty great. And a lot of people might assume that that would be impossible. Can you talk a little bit about your relationship and how she's been able to really encourage you as you explored and really found your way to your identity?
Certainly. And this you know, every trans person is going to have a very different story. Mine is unique in the sense that my wife has identified as a gay woman since the age of 13. And at the time we met, she saw me as the genderqueer person that I was, who was searching. And we decided to start a family together. And so she's never really seen me as a man. She's always seen me how I kind of wanted to be seen. And but she was the one who brought me to realizing I was depressed and very dysphoric, you know, over the past few years, and making sure to set the ground rules that, you know, it would be okay if I wanted to continue my transition physically. And I'm glad I did.
It's really a family transition, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And so, I mean, so the transition from us to a straight appearing relationship to a same-sex relationship has been very natural for us. I mean, any period of big change in a long-term relationship is going to produce stresses and anxieties, but in our case, none of them have related to her wanting to be attracted to a woman or not.
For other people in your lives, I'm curious about this, even if you have family members or friends or loved ones who accept your identity, is it hard to cope with the fact that they still may need some time to adjust, even to mourn the change in you, even if they're happy about the person you're becoming? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
I think so. I think any transition that people go through, we're in a stable relationship to begin with, and it's natural for people to place gender expectations on others. We just do that. We don't think twice about it. And so now all of a sudden you're going through a change, and so all those expectations have to kind of switch over. And so that's a very chaotic period of time. So some people make that adjustment fairly quickly, and others it really does take a long time, depending upon their level of education and their level of self-understanding. And so I think the grieving process is just like if someone dies in your family, it might take you a year to get over, and it might take you a few years to get over. Most families do tend to come around, but it can take some time. But it's not always the case. Sometimes we do lose certain family members that isolate us for the rest of their lives, especially if it hinges around, you know, a religious identity or morals.
Definitely.
That they just would have to completely dismantle their system of beliefs to learn to accept you. So instead of trying to adjust their own belief systems, they just push you out of their world and give you a label that you're, you know, a sinner or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you sound really intellectual about that now, but I have to imagine at the time that you were experiencing this, it is just like a gut punch.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the middle of it now. I came out to friends and family in January, and I have lots of extended family that just, you know, refuse to believe that my identity exists, you know. And it's okay to have an opinion about someone, but, you know, saying that I'm not a woman is more aggressive than that. You know, it's not your opinion. It's telling me I don't exist. And so that's very hurtful.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's go on the phone now to Robert in Arlington. Hello, Robert.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Welcome.
I'm going to try and make this simple. It's very complicated, though. I'm transgendered, or I feel that I'm transgendered, have been all my life. I'm very much male, very much a man. Physically, but I'm a very pretty man. My face is very feminine, and I've lived my life just the torture of everybody pointing out that you're not a man or you're not a boy. It was, you know, a boy when I was young. You're a girl, and now older, you know, I'm 50 years old, and people are still telling me I'm not a man, I'm a woman, and I'm hetero. So, you know, but I always get the gay bashing and all that other stuff. Well, this has led to major mental problems. I now have schizophrenia, and just from all the torture and everything that people have put me through my life.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for your call. It certainly, I think Robert's call certainly speaks to the fact that, again, society has expectations based on what other people perceive you to be. And Liz, you said something earlier, which is that people gender me based in one way or another. And it's almost like some of this, as much as we all have this inherent sense of who we are, there's also the rest of the world to contend with and what they expect of you.
I think so. And the expectations that are placed on us can be so devastating when we go against them that it can be really hard on our psyches, especially when we get depressed. Because if every relationship in your entire life is now put into question, it's very traumatizing for people. And it can really, for some people, it can really create grave consequences to their mental health, and they can have psychotic breaks and all that kind of thing. So not frequently, but it can happen.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. So as you pointed out earlier, Renee, not all transgender people undergo sex reassignment surgery. Not everyone undergoes hormone treatment. Some people can't afford it because my understanding is it's very often not covered by any kind of standard health insurance. But for those who do, what kinds of psychological counseling and what kinds of medical counseling are required to help you understand the ramifications of those procedures and to sort of cope with the ones that may be irreversible?
Well, for transgender individuals that are going to do a physical transition, most people in the mental health and medical professions will follow something called the WPATH Standards of Care. And WPATH is the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. And for each type or each, subtype of transition, like, for example, if you're going to start hormone replacement therapy, generally a transgender individual will have to have some kind of letter of recommendation from a counselor. Now, the counselor can give a letter of recommendation on meeting a client a single time, or it may take a few months, depending upon where they're at with their level of awareness and consciousness. For surgeries like TOP surgery or gender reassignment surgery, generally you want to have someone meet you a number of times so that you can kind of get an idea whether they're stable, they really want to, you know, do this transition, they're not flip-flopping back and forth. But there's some issues that come up with the standards of care, and that you really don't want to take away the autonomy of the individual. You want them to be able to make the decisions themselves. So the counselor is put in a position of, I want to help this person transition, but it may not be right for them quite yet. So what does the counselor do? Because the counselor doesn't want to lose their integrity in providing a letter for someone they don't feel like is quite ready yet. Mm-hmm. So those kind of issues are really tricky and you have to deal with on a one-on-one basis.
I have to imagine if for much of your life you have felt like the greatest thing missing was your physical body matching the person you felt you were. But then once it happens, I mean, life is life, right? You get in a car wreck, you have little things happening along the way. And I wonder if there's a moment after you make the transition and you are living as the person you feel you've always been, if you sort of settle back into realizing it solves many issues maybe, but it doesn't make your life like perfect every single day.
Yeah, it's definitely not about making your life perfect. It's just something that needs to be fixed.
And the way I like to say it is that what transition did for me in my life is it allowed me to live in the real world instead of living in my head.
Sure.
The sort of fantasy of what you wanted to be.
Right. So you're out of a closet, you're free, you're able to be a genuine individual, you're able to share your thoughts and feelings without fear of rejection. You're just living your life organically on a day-to-day basis. You get up and you express yourself through whatever clothes or makeup or, you know, whatever activities you want to participate in on a free basis. And you're not always having to wish, you know, I wish I could live this. Like, you know, you're in the real world now.
Yeah, that's a really great analogy, Renee. I totally agree. Excuse me, in that having or going through the physical transition liberated me as much as Renee said, you're living in your head all the time. You're thinking about, you know, how do I look to everyone else? Or even when you're alone, you're thinking how disgusted you are or how much better you would feel if your body were another way. Body image is important to everyone, regardless of your gender identity. So just being able to have those things corrected or adjusted liberates you to worry about other things in life, just like everyone else. You know, what am I going to do this weekend to have a little fun? You know, what am I going to do for my child's future now? You know, and you're worried about, or your concerns or more real life issues other than what's going on with your body.
And it's not all about changing the body to match the mind. Well, I think that's a part of it for a lot of individuals. I think a lot of it's really just about coming out of a closet, mm-hmm. and being able to, you know, freely share those thoughts and feelings, because there's certainly many people that do not fall in, you know, most people that do a physical transition tend to identify as male or female. But there's a lot of folks out there that really identify as genderqueer. They're kind of in a different place of the spectrum. And so those individuals would feel freer when they're out of a closet rather than having to do something physical.
We're speaking this hour with three members of the transgender community in North Texas: Renee Baker, who is a counselor and case manager at North Texas Youth Connection; Carter Brown, who is founder and executive director of Black Trans Men, Inc.; and Liz Larson, who has been writing about her transition online. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with three members of the transgender community in North Texas: Liz Larson, Carter Brown, and Renee Baker. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, send email to think@kera.org or call 1-800-933-5372. So you all are here, and we appreciate that you're here as members of the transgender community. I wonder, in terms of identity, how your identity as a trans woman or a trans man compares with your identity as simply a woman or a man.
Being trans is just it's an adjective. It describes personal history the same as someone might be from a certain state or a certain upbringing. You know, being trans is just a type of woman or a man. You know, it's...
Yeah, I usually try to expand the category of woman to include transgender women, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. I would say it's a subcategory of woman. Generally, we use the term cisgender for non-transgender. And so those that have not gone through any kind of a physical transition, that would be a cisgender woman. Similarly, we have cisgender, you know, men and transgender men. So
being a trans woman is a specific experience of womanhood. I think, you know, there's certain things that are different about being a trans woman than a cis woman. And that definitely plays into the special people that we are.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Renardo in Fort Worth. Hi, Renardo.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
You have a great show.
Thanks.
Hey, I just wanted to hear the panel talk a little bit more, or actually talk about what with the physical process, et cetera, what kind of problems they encounter with insurance companies and their own employees in regards to insurance. Because I know that the process of transgender, of going through the process of being transgender, it's very expensive, and not so much the operation or the operation stuff, but also maintaining and also anything that has to do afterwards.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that.
Sure. The insurance companies are surprisingly coming around more than you would think so, and part of the reason is because in 2008, the American Medical Association has put out a memo that says that gender reassignment surgery and gender hormone treatments and all that are the standard procedure that one follows when you're identified as gender dysphoric or having gender identity disorder. So because of that, a lot of people are coming around now, and the cost really to insurance companies isn't that much because there's not massive amounts of people that are coming forward. For example, a lot of companies want to be seen as very embracive of diversity and multiculturalism, and so they're trying to do things to help transgender individuals as well as all cultural individuals, and taking on women's issues and things like that. The Human Rights Campaign is an organization that measures how well a company performs in terms of human rights. And for them to get a 100 on their score, they have to include transgender surgeries. So therefore, they're largely becoming part of, standard insurance plans. And the costs are really not as high as you would think as compared to, say, domestic partnerships, pregnancies, and so forth. Those kind of costs are a lot more.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. So I think many people have gotten past the idea that sexual orientation is a choice. I think many people don't believe that sexual identity is a choice. On the other hand, there's an element of decision, right, to making the move to live as your gender identity. And I wonder if it felt so much like a choice to you as like something that simply was an imperative, or what kind of calculations you went through in your own mind when you were thinking about openly living as the gender that you feel you are?
Yes, it was definitely a process for me. And honestly, I went through a lot of the thoughts that the common person does or the non-transgender person does. Is that going to be weird, and the common things, where will I fit into society then? What do I have to find a whole new circle of friends? Because if I'm going to transition into a man, I can no longer fit into the lesbian community, And at that time, I've been about 10 years in transition. And although a lot of progress has been made, even just 10 years ago, people weren't as open-minded or transgender people weren't as visible. So even in the African American community, I had to calculate what kind of discrimination am I going to face from my own community? How can I transition while working at my job? Will I lose my job? So there's a lot of things that you do have to calculate into your decision to move forward, finding your own freedom.
Did it feel like a loss to sort of give up your place within the lesbian community?
It was a loss in a sense of having to start over. Mm-hmm. And find a new community. It was a loss in not having the support of a lot of my former friends in the lesbian community. Or being, when you gather to the, or when you're drawn to the lesbian and gay community, you not only find community, but in a lot of places you reestablish family. Mm-hmm. Because gay and lesbian experience is a lot like the transgender experience in that once you come out, there are going to be losses. There are going to be, different things that are going to change in your life. So I had to start all over. It was like coming out twice to come into a transgender identity. So again, I was back at, you know, finding out who my real friends were, finding out, you know, is it okay for me to work here and be myself, finding out where do I fit into this new community as far as trying to find a mate. You know, who's going to want me as a transgender person? Who dates a transgender person? And these are all the things that I had to calculate as well.
Definitely, transition didn't feel optional. Once you, you know, stepping up to it, it's not really something you can back away from. I've had friends that, you know, got on hormones for a few months in their early 20s and then backed away from it. And then it just comes back 10, 20 years later, you know, and with so much regret that they didn't continue their transition the first time around.
Hmm. Was there anyone in your life who surprised you with their acceptance of your transition and your identity?
Well, I guess for me, I thought my mom would have come around quicker. It's taken her longer than I thought. Actually, I thought it was going to be harder for my dad. And I guess he was kind of losing his son. But actually, my mom, and it kind of made sense later because my mom was born in the 30s, and I think all the women in her family grew up in that time, you know, the old black and white films that you were supposed to grow up and be Susie Homemaker and send your husband out to work and become the pride of the family. And so I think for her, I was a point of pride for the family as a successful male individual, and so coming out, it's kind of a really big loss and kind of a, I think that because there's such a stigma against transgender individuals as being sick, that it kind of makes you feel bad as a parent until you're able to come around and understand being transgender is really a blessing. And I think that's one thing that's been hard for my mom to work towards, but, you know, just but she's come around. The blouse I'm wearing today, she sent me in the mail yesterday. So she's really made a huge progress, and we love each other very much.
Well, it suits you, the blouse.
Thank you.
I mean, it does sometimes have to feel, is it exhausting that you have this other level of calculation to make when you meet a new person, or even in evaluating your relationships with people you've known for a long time, and sort of always have to wonder how much of your interaction is colored by your identity?
It can be exhausting as much as you let it. At the point I am in my journey, it's not very exhausting. One, because I'm visible and I'm very transparent. So usually I'm in environments where it's already known, or because I'm able to blend, if it's not known, it's not anything that is challenged, or my identity isn't challenged in a scenario. But it can be, it can still be exhausting. I mean, to this day, even though when I go to the restroom, I'm still just subconsciously surveying my surroundings to make sure that I'm in a safe place, or to make sure that, you know, no one's going to try to look over, or I'm going to be found out and attacked or anything like that. I mean, it's still a very real thing that transgender people are not only just discriminated, but to the extent of being murdered just for being transgender. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a point where you can have some relief of worry, but it's just mandatory that you remain cautious of your surroundings simply because that's the society that we live in.
Is it easy for you to have friends who are cisgendered heterosexual males? Are they comfortable with who you are, or did you have to sort of find a select group of individuals who are cool with who you are?
I've been fortunate that it's very easy for me. Mm-hmm. It's very easy for me because, as I stated, as a young child, that's generally where I gravitated to, playing with other boys. So I'm very communicable with other men with no problem. It's harder for me, or it has been more of a challenge for me, to find other transgender men and relate in this community, because everyone is so different. I mean, with mm-hmm. with a bio male, you can kind of generically or blanketly say his childhood went like this in certain areas, or his interests are like this, you know, sports, cars, girls, you know, because those are the things that they were pretty much raised to, or that they've just grown to have as characteristics in society. Whereas transgender men, we all have such diverse and different backgrounds. You know, some were married, some were pregnant, some never were, some are just like me, some are nothing like me. So it's like a microcosm
of society.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Within the transgender community mm-hmm. itself. So, you know, just the gender identity or the cross-gender identity is usually the basic common denominator, but it's so much different with a lot of people in the community.
What advice would you give to parents of transgender children? And I realize this is a lengthy process, and you know, everybody deserves a chance to sort of explore who they are for as long as it takes. But children who express is it an atypical presentation of gender? Is there the correct term?
Sure.
Who want to both support their children but also protect them from people who don't understand why they don't conform to society's expectations for their biological sex?
I've had that question come up recently. A father was bringing his F to M son in for counseling. I'll disguise the conversation so they won't recognize. But the dad was concerned that the son had too many feminine attributes, and the son was okay with that, mm-hmm. that it was okay to have these feminine attributes. And so I explained to the father that it's fairly typical for transgender individuals to allow themselves a little bit more gender freedom than the general public does. And I think that we don't necessarily develop the hard, rigid identities of gender that most people do. It's just we're just a little bit more flexible, and we're okay with other people being more flexible in their genders. And I think once a parent can understand that, then they can not have a lot of anxiety that their child isn't transgender, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think, and for me, gender expressive traits are completely separate from my gender identity. You know, being a programmer or any of the interests that I have are, while that more male-dominated areas, you know, I can be a woman and do those things too, for sure.
We have been speaking this hour with Renee Baker, who's a counselor and case manager at North Texas Youth Connection, Carter Brown, founder and executive director of Black Trans Men, Inc., and electronics engineer Liz Larson, who has been writing online about her transition. It's been wonderful to have all three of you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Our podcast is produced by Christine McConnell. We had help today on the phones from Christina Martinez. Lindsay Connect produced this show, and Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can learn more about the program, find out about upcoming shows, and download the podcast free at kera.org/think. Send any comments, questions, or suggestions via email to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.